This is the regular weekly broadcast of the Commonwealth Club of California. Today we are privileged to have as our speaker Dr. John W. Klein, former president of the American Medical Association and long a leading spokesman for American medicine. Dr. Klein is a graduate of the University of California and of the Harvard Medical School. A diplomate of the American Board of Surgery, he is also a fellow of the American College of Surgeons. For many years, he has been a member of the Cancer Commission of the California Medical Association, having served as chairman of the commission for 3 years. Currently, Dr. Klein is chairman of the Medical and Scientific Committee of the National American Cancer Society. Dr. Klein will address us today on the subject, the need for control of cancer quackery. Dr. Klein.
Thank you, Mr. Rockwell. It is a pleasure again to address you on a subject I consider to be of great importance to the health of the people of California. The medical charlatan, or quack, has been with us since the beginning of recorded history and must have existed much earlier. He always has exercised his greatest influence among the ignorant, the superstitious, and those who are fearful and emotionally unstrung. These are his most likely victims. The activities of the quack encompass many diseases, but he seems to specialize in those which are difficult to treat and to cure. For instance, prior to the discovery of insulin, there were literally hundreds of quack remedies for diabetes. The venereal disease quack flourished before the advent of the antibiotics. When a generally successful method of treating any disease is developed, quackery in this field begins to recede and eventually disappears. Quackery is still widespread, but probably is more prevalent in the field of cancer than in any other. This is the result of the nature of the disease and the emotional reaction associated with it. The very word cancer strikes terror in the hearts of many people and prepares them to become victims of the quack. Many people still believe that once the diagnosis of cancer is established, the case is hopeless. This belief is far from the truth. At the present time, one-third of all cancers can be cured. The results of treatment of certain cancers are far better. For instance, in California, almost one-half of the women properly treated for cancer of the breast are alive, well, and free from demonstrable cancer at the end of 5 years. These results are progressively improving. There are only two currently available methods of curing cancer. One is by surgery, and the other is by irradiation. X-rays, radium, radioactive substances, and some of the new supervoltage devices affect cures, and in cases which cannot be cured, prolong life and provide protracted relief of symptoms. Chemotherapy, which is the use of chemical agents, offers great promise for the future. Some of the substances now in use do much to improve the cancer patient. Protracted remissions and many cases of leukemia and certain tumors can now be accomplished. During these remissions, the patient may feel entirely well and pursue his or her normal life. The hormone treatment of certain types of cancer likewise relieves symptoms and prolongs life. Cancer as a whole is probably many diseases and probably has multiple causes. All cancers have one common characteristic. Certain body cells, which ordinarily grow and divide in an established pattern, for some reason cease to behave in a normal manner. Some undetermined influence causes them to grow and to multiply in a wild and disorderly way, destroying normal tissues. And if uncontrolled, this growth will produce death of the individual. The American Cancer Society, the Damon Runyon Fund, and the federal government, they spend many millions of dollars each year in financing research into the causes and cure of cancer. This research is carried on in our universities, medical schools, and hospitals, and is performed by trained medical and other scientists, and by competent clinicians with extensive knowledge and wide experience in dealing with cancer. This research is carried out under ideal circumstances, and the results are fully published in responsible medical and scientific journals. Many partial answers are already known, but our information is fragmentary. Research in proper institutions, under proper conditions, and carried out by properly trained, competent investigators in the course of time will provide us with the accumulated knowledge necessary to deal more effectively with cancer. The answers probably will come piecemeal and not all at once. No one can say when an important breakthrough will occur. It is inevitable, however, in the course of time. In the meantime, we must rely upon the currently available methods of treatment. As pointed out earlier, these are surgery and irradiation, and both are increasing in effectiveness. Any cancer which can be removed or destroyed before it is spread can be cured. Time is extremely important. Delay may be disastrous. If cancer is to be treated successfully, it must be treated in an early stage. It is for this reason that the American Cancer Society and other agencies striving to improve the results in cancer emphasize in their public education campaigns the importance of physical checkups and the recognition of the 7 danger signals. The cancer quack, however, by playing on the emotions of the patient and his family and by exploiting the natural desire of people to avoid surgical procedures and radiation therapy, holds out false hope of cure by a simpler means. In treating a patient who has curable cancer with worthless remedies until the cancer becomes incurable, he deprives the patient of the one golden opportunity for cure. In controlling the disease in late cases, the methods of the quack are far less effective than the currently standard methods of treatment, and do far less to make the remainder of the patient's life comfortable and pleasant. The quack usually is interested only in his own profit. He bleeds the patient and his family of their earnings and savings without benefit. He leaves disappointment, heartache, suffering, financial ruin, and human disaster in his wake. He perpetrates the meanest and most cruel of frauds in modern life. The knowing cancer quack is the most unscrupulous rascal in our society. One may well ask, how widespread is cancer quackery? This is a difficult question to answer accurately. It is estimated that there are about 4,000 cancer quacks currently operating in this country. The large cities and the metropolitan areas are their happy hunting grounds, but their malicious influence extends into every village. It is not uncommon for people who travel great distances to be treated by the cancer quack. Daily, the local branches of the Cancer Society and the Cancer Commission of the California Medical Association receive inquiries concerning worthless treatments. Cancer quackery is big business. It is known that some of these charlatans mulct the public of hundreds of thousands of dollars every year, and the total expended for these fraudulent so-called cures amounts to many millions annually. In certain areas, the quack organization is so extensive that a patient who has been treated for cancer in a legitimate institution hardly has arrived home from the hospital before he or his family begin to receive telephone calls soliciting him as a patient. This must mean that the quacks employ a hard core of paid agents for this purpose. Who are these charlatans who prey upon the ignorance, superstition, and fear of the cancer sufferer? They come from all walks of life. One of the most successful of the cancer quacks is said to have completed his education with a 6th grade in grammar school. Some are physicians and surgeons licensed by the state. Because of their background, they know their treatments are worthless, and they trade upon the prestige of their degrees and licenses to traffic in human life with our own gang. These are the most reprehensible villains of the lot. San Francisco produced one of the most fantastic cancer quacks in history. He was Dr. Albert Abrams. Dr. Abrams was born in San Francisco. He was graduated from Heidelberg at the age of 19 and from the Cooper Medical College, later to become the Stanford Medical School, in 1883. He taught internal medicine at his alma mater and held the rank of professor of pathology from 1893 to 1890. In 1909 and 1910, he published two works which suggested that he was venturing into uncharted waters. His first invention was a diagnosing machine called a dynamizer. It was a box containing an insane jungle of wires. One wire ran to an electrical source, and another was attached to the forehead of a healthy person. A drop of blood obtained from the patient and placed on a piece of filter paper was put inside the box. Abrams would then tap the abdomen of the healthy person who was stripped to the waist and always facing west. By listening to the sounds produced, the doctor claimed to be able to diagnose the ills of the patient who provided the blood sample. Not only would this diagnose the disease, but it would locate the part of the body in which the disease resided and estimate its severity. Even more absurd was a later development, in which he claimed that he could determine the patient's age, sex, and whether he belonged to one of the six religious groups, Catholic, Protestant, Jewish, Seventh-day Adventist, Methodist, or Theosophist. Eventually, he claimed he could diagnose from a sample of handwriting as well as from blood. By 1920, Dr. Abrams had invented the now infamous oscilloscope. This was a therapeutic machine which treated disease, including cancer, and on the basis of the diagnosis made from a drop of blood. Soon after the oscilloscope came the reflexophone, a machine for diagnosing disease via telephone, and subsequently several other equally ingenious electrical devices. He ran a school for his disciples to learn how to use these machines, and published a periodical journal. He also lectured widely throughout the country. When the doctor died in 1923, he left a $2 million estate. This fortune was amassed by renting of these devices, as none of them was ever sold. Those who rented the machines had to swear that they would never look inside of the tightly sealed box. Shortly after the doctor died, some of these boxes were opened and found to contain a mass of nonsensical wiring attached to all sorts of meaningless dials and gadgets. A Michigan doctor once sent Dr. Abrams a blood sample from a Plymouth Rock rooster and obtained from Dr. Abrams a diagnosis of malaria, cancer, diabetes, and two venereal diseases. It seems almost unbelievable that people would fall for such a fraud, and especially after the experience of the Michigan doctor, which was widely publicized. In spite of this, Dr. Abrams' original organization still exists here in San Francisco under the name of the Electronic Medical Foundation, and similar apparatus is being used in California for the diagnosis and treatment of cancer. A gentleman by the name of Fred J. Hart is president of the Electronic Medical Foundation, and is also president of the National Health Federation, an organization dedicated to championing the cause of many unorthodox methods of treating cancer and other diseases. How can one recognize the charlatans? It's not always easy. However, in general, they have the following common characteristics. One, the treatment or method of preparation of the agent used is secret, and it can be obtained only from the individual concerned. Two, he uses testimonials, planted news stories, and word-of-mouth advertising to support his claims. These are not supported by reports in current reputable scientific journals. Three, he discourages or refuses consultation with reputable physicians. stating that the so-called medical trust is against him. And when he has been exposed, he protests that he is being persecuted and that a new pasteur is being nipped in the bud. Four, his records are scanty or non-existent. Five, he often uses the name of a high-sounding research organization to cloak his operations. Investigation will show that he owns or controls the foundation or organization so used. Six, he refuses to submit his treatment for trial by competent, impartial investigators. If he agrees to do so, he rarely fulfills the agreement. Seven, his principal supporters may be actors, writers, lawyers, ministers, or politicians, perhaps distinguished in their own fields, but not persons whose background of training and experience would qualify them to evaluate a treatment for cancer. Eight, there is always a financial consideration. He may claim that he is interested in human welfare and is engaged in research, but his services or the material he uses have a price tag, and usually an exorbitant one. What efforts have been made to control the nefarious practices of the quack? In our state, the Cancer Commission of the California Medical Association has investigated a number of worthless cancer treatments and has publicly exposed them. These efforts have done some good, but have not achieved control of quackery. The Cancer Commission is not a governmental body and lacks the authority requisite to stop the activities of the quack. Last year, the Food and Drug Administration of the federal government placarded the post offices of the entire country, warning the public against the hoxie treatment. This is said to have had some beneficial effect, but the treatment is still being administered in a number of communities in California and elsewhere. Federal laws have been effective in banning the interstate shipment of certain drugs, substances, and devices. Most of these, however, are simple and inexpensive to produce. It is easy for the quack to manufacture and dispense them within the borders of the state and thereby avoid the application of federal law. It is obvious that there is need for firm state control. This requires legislation. 2 years ago, the California Division of the American Cancer Society, the California Medical Association, and the California Osteopathic Association sponsored legislation for this purpose. The proposal would have set up an impartial scientific body within the State Department of Public Health to ascertain the value of methods of treatment of cancer. And if, after investigation, a particular drug, substance, device, or method were found to be worthless or harmful, its use could be stopped, and if necessary, by court order. The bill passed the Assembly by a vote of 60-6. The Senate Committee on Public Health and Safety was of the opinion that the matter needed further study and created an interim committee for that purpose. Many of you will recall the press, radio, and television reports of the hearings held before this committee in Los Angeles and San Francisco during the past 2 years. The hearings were comprehensive, and all who wished to be heard were given an opportunity to speak. A number of distinguished scientists, recognized as national and international authorities in the field of cancer, testified concerning the inadequacy of existing laws and the need for legislation that would make it possible to control cancer quackery. Among those opposing the type of legislation the committee was considering were Mr. Fred J. Hart, president of the Electronic Medical Foundation, the National Federation of Health, which publishes the Herald of Health, in which unorthodox methods of treatment of many diseases are publicized. Others were Dr. Andrew C. Ivey of Chicago, the principal proponent of Cabazon, and a freelance writer from Chicago also, who espoused the cause of another treatment which was developed in San Francisco and completely discredited as worthless more than 25 years ago. Those testifying in favor of the legislation included Dr. Raymond Kaiser of the National Cancer Institute, Dr. Gordon Granger of the Federal Food and Drug Administration, Dr. Andrew Small of Dallas, who is the Director of Cancer Education in the Medical School of the University of Texas, Dr. David Wood, the Director of Cancer Research at the University of California Medical School, Dr. Justin Stein, Coordinator of the Cancer Studies at the Medical School at UCLA, Dr. L. Henry Garland of San Francisco, Clinical Professor of Radiology in Stanford Medical School, who is one of the foremost students of cancer quackery, and Dr. Cornelius P. Rhodes. Dr. Rhodes is director of the Sloan Kettering Foundation, which is the cancer research portion of the justly famous Memorial Hospital and Cornell Medical School in New York. The description of cancer research in this institution stood out in marked contrast to the tawdry claims of cancer research made by some of the cancer quacks. Dr. Paul Kirk, a distinguished chemist and a professor of criminalistics at the University of California, and Dr. Arthur First, also a distinguished chemist and an experimental pharmacologist at Stanford, both testified that they had analyzed herbiazin and found it to consist of nothing but mineral oil. The identical nature of their findings is more striking because their investigations were conducted independently, and neither was aware that the other was analyzing herbiazin. The preamble of the bill introduced 2 years ago succinctly expresses the need for such legislation. It is as follows, and I quote, "Despite intensive campaigns of public education, there is a lack of adequate and accurate information among the public with respect to the presently proven methods for the diagnosis, treatment, and cure of cancer. Various persons in this state have represented and continue to represent themselves as possessing medicines, techniques, skills, or devices for the effective diagnosis, treatment, or cure of cancer, which representations, in the light of established medical and scientific knowledge and experience, are misleading to the public, with the result that large numbers of the public, relying on such representations, needlessly die of cancer, and substantial amounts of the savings of individuals and families relying on such representations are needlessly wasted and lost. It is therefore in the public interest that the public be afforded full and accurate knowledge as to the facilities and methods for the diagnosis, treatment, and cure of cancer available in this state, and to that end, there be provided means for testing and investigating the value, or lack thereof, of remedies, devices, drugs, or compounds, and informing the public of the facts found, and protecting the public from misrepresentation in such matters." End of quotation. The statement submitted to the Senate Interim Committee by the California Medical Association further emphasizes the need for legislation to control cancer quackery. It is as follows, and I quote, "While the California Medical Association is opposed to quackery in all of its forms and is opposed to false and fraudulent claims, techniques, and practices in any phase of the healing art, the cancer quack is the lowest of all forms in a class by himself. His victims are easily deluded, and his promises desperately believed. The cancer sufferer, or the individual who mistakenly believes he has cancer does not meet the cancer quack on even terms. The advantage is all with the quack. Sound public policy dictates that public protection be accorded the cancer victims by legislation. This approach, meaning adequate legislation, it is believed, will deprive the cancer quack of the tools of his trade and result in added protection for the public, often most vulnerable and at times very desperate. End of quotation. The need for strong legislation is obvious. It is my understanding that the Senate Interim Committee is now in the process of drafting such a proposal. Its exact form and content will not be known until the bill has been introduced. It is the hope of those adequately trained and experienced in the field of cancer and familiar with the menace of cancer quackery that the proposed legislation will be adequate to control the fraudulent and cruel activities of the cancer quack, and that it will receive favorable consideration by the legislature. Such is in the public interest and would be a constructive public health measure. It is hoped that those interested citizens who desire to see the unfortunate cancer sufferers in this state protected from the activities of the cancer quack will make their wishes known to the members of the Assembly and the Senate from their districts. This is the democratic process of securing legislation, which is so obviously in the public interest. Thank you very much.